Namaste and welcome back to another episode of The Sapient. Today we have another Australian, a wild creature, right? in some terms, because, you know, we don't see a lot of Australians. So welcome to the podcast, Kelly. How are you doing today? What's up?
Hi, Ganesh. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I'm excited to be one of the few speaking to the many and today on your podcast.
So so automatically you're a high impact character.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. anybody who is watching this on YouTube is probably overwhelmed by your background.
Oh, all this stuff going on in the background.
Yeah. It's like you are a typical over-accomplisher, I guess.
What? Type A personality? I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
That's only the bit that you can see in frame. That's not the bit that's off the side of the frame as well.
This conversation with Kylie is brought to you by Beginner's Guide to AI podcast. AI can feel overwhelming, right? Every day, there is a new shiny tool. Another hype, another headline. But where should you actually start? What's working for other businesses and what types of AI really matter for your company? That's exactly what folks at The Beginner's Guide to AI unpack. Each episode blends insightful conversations with business leaders and easy-to-follow explainer episodes to help you navigate the AI landscape with confidence. Tune into Beginner's Guide to AI wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Now, let's get back to the show. Yes. So, guys, Kylie has all the certifications that all of us have together. So introduce yourself, you know, let us know what you do and, you know, what's your kind of story.
Yeah. So my name is Kylie Liotta. I am the founder and chief vision officer of a company called Elements for Success. And that name was derived from one of the originals of personal development, Earl Nightingale, who said that success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal or ideal. And in my opinion, there's lots of different elements that make that up for different people. So what success looks like for you, Ganesh, might look like different for me. And each person needs an individualized approach to the elements that they need to be successful in what they want to create. And that kind of came about from my background. So for over 20 years, I worked in education, where I worked with young people with disability, complex behavior, and trauma, where they were kind of, they didn't fit in a system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that we crafted success for these young people was by creating an individualized approach, seeing what was going on behind the mask of behavior and implementing an individualized, personalized approach to their learning that was able to set them up for success. And when we get into the corporate world and when we get into the business world and we get into leadership and life, it's no different. We all need a personalized approach. You know, we talk a lot in terms of generic terms, but really it is not a one-size-fits-all model. And one of the things that I pride myself on is being a out-of-the-box thinker for traditional problems, out-of-the-box solutions, and also to creating that as an individualized approach through creating safe spaces for brave and courageous conversations. Mm-hmm. Because it's actually not very easy to ask for help. We talk about it a lot, but the actual action of asking for help is quite a complicated process. And so when we do ask for help, we need to be doing that in a safe environment to enable us to have those brave and courageous conversations to get that momentum moving forward to accomplish what that success looks like for us.
Yep. And how do you identify a leader?
Oh, so that's a very open-ended question. We're straight into it today, right?
Yep.
So I don't believe in the concept that a leader is a titled position. I think you can lead wherever you are at. And I have seen people that are probably on the lower end of the hierarchy demonstrate more leadership skills than people on the higher end of the hierarchy. So I believe there's a couple of elements to make someone that demonstrates the attributes of a leader. So first of all, they have an attitude of continuous improvement. So they each day they wanted to be better than they were the day before. Secondly, they're wanting to support others to be better than the way they were the day before. And so, and you take a sense of responsibility, and we have this concept, and I don't know where you are, if it's a similar sort of idea, but in Australia, we're quite well known for this concept of tall poppy syndrome, where instead of, if someone's doing well, we have this innate need to bring them back down to this level. And who do you think you are to rise up and be successful and do all these things? And I actually think that's such a tragic disadvantage to leadership, because leadership is around not only acknowledging and giving ourselves permission to acknowledge that we're doing a good job, but it also gives permission for others to go, well, if they can acknowledge that they're doing a good job, then I can do the same. And so I see leadership as a supportive role. We are always better when we operate from a lens of service to others. And as a byproduct, we're better. You know, leaders aren't people that are dragging someone along for the ride. People that willingly come on the journey with us, and that's through creating influence and creating psychologically safe environments that people want to join the movement and believe in what we believe and want and get the support they need to be the best version of themselves. I think that's some of the key attributes to what a true leader is.
Got it. And do you think, right, like the whole mold of a leader, right, like the character of a leader, do you think it's like an innate ability, or do you think that is something that people learn as they go through life?
Ooh, I think it can be both. There are some people that genetically just seem to be hardwired in that with those natural inclinations, but I actually think it's something that can be really taught. And the reason that I know that to be true is that I have been called into organizations when they're ready to boot out leaders, and my job was to go, Kylie, you're the last stop for this person before they go on to a performance plan. And we've been able to recalibrate and create them and walk them back into the strengths of their leaders. And they've gone on to really successful careers. So I think to think that it's only something that you're born with is quite a finite way of thinking. And it's quite a hopeless way of thinking, because then you're like, well, what's the point of trying? And yeah. I think so we need to understand that anything that we do, we can learn, you know, these skills and attributes to be better versions of ourselves, and that includes leadership.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So when we talk about leadership, right, as let's say a mold, because you have already mentioned what you foresee, right, like what you identify a leader as, right? There is this famous dog personality, like a dog handler, Cesar Millan, right? He says that humans are the only species that follow unfit leaders. Right.
Amazing and accurate.
Do you think that holds like value or weight, or do you think that's kind of not right, not true?
Well, so I think conformity to hierarchical pressures mean that absolutely at times we follow unfit leaders because they've been given a position of power. And they use it as power over. And in a lot of hierarchical structures, that's the way it operates. So regardless of what you think of them as a leader or not, your job is to be compliant to that process. Mm-hmm. But I do think the reason that will not be sustainable is that's not a psychologically safe environment. Mm-hmm. You know, not that leadership is parenting, but I use a lot of parenting analogies. Because, you know, my generation, you know, the 21-year-olds that we were talking about earlier, no, a little bit older than that, we were raised on fear, do it or else, right? Yeah. And I didn't want, and that's just generationally, that's how we were raised. Mm-hmm. Some with the beatings, some without the beatings, but the underlying theme was still there, right? Do it or else.
Yep.
And, you know, I wanted to raise my children not on fear. Mm-hmm. Now, that meant having more conversations. It meant explaining, having further discussions. It meant circling back. It meant doing all this stuff. But what it meant was creating a psychologically safe environment where we create a sense of belonging. We recognize that people are learning and they're not going to get it right all the time. We recognize that everyone's contribution is valued. But most importantly, that we can challenge something without fear of reprisal or repercussion. And I think those unfit leaders that you talk about are threatened when that stuff occurs. Yep. And so therefore, yes, we hierarchically do, but I believe in the next few years, we're going to see such a shift in movements around the fact that if this is not a psychologically safe environment for me to work in, then I'm going to walk, and exit the opportunity because I want to work somewhere where I feel safe enough to turn up to work. And those leaders will either have to change or they'll end up becoming obsolete. because that power over model is no longer effective in leadership.
Yeah, because if you look at the modern corporate structure, right, or even the culture, typically most power is with the lower management, right? It's not the higher management, and it's like when the lower management walks, the organization is gutted, right? I feel like lower management, and even to some extent the middle management, responds very very calm and quietly to issues, right, and to problems day to day. But the higher management or the top management seems to be shaken very quickly, right? Even within a quarter or even just like within two quarters, which is like nothing. If you look at the time lapse of an organization, right? So do you think that there is some level of consciousness, right, that goes into making this, I am going to lead because I don't see anybody around me who is capable of doing that, right? Do you think that is a major factor in today's corporate culture, or do you think it's like, you know, she's the manager and she's going to take care of it?
I think there's a couple of things. First of all, I don't think people are taught how to be leaders before they get their leadership positions. I certainly wasn't. I in Australia, I call it, we do it kind of ass about. We get the leadership position based on the skills that we currently have. And then maybe if we're lucky, we get leadership training. So we're not actually taught and given the opportunity to learn the skills of leadership before we get into that role. So we're kind of set up for failure to start with. I think secondly to that is the fact that we have people that don't know how to take the macro, the big vision, and bring it down to the micro. And we have people that don't know how to do the micro, but don't know how to max it up to the macro. And so you've got a disconnect there when people are focused on short term, can't see the big picture, or people are only focused on the big picture and can't bring it down to make it accessible. And I think the other part of that is the fact that, you know, we have leaders that are still got that power over concept, that's the construct of leadership. But I think the younger generation, you know, I talk about the difference between people leaders and process leaders. And we tend to have a preference for one or the other. But I think as leadership's moving forward, we need to be able to do both. And I do think that relational leadership piece is going to be such a huge piece. And it's no longer enough to just be skilled at the hard skill of doing the job. You're going to have these soft skills. And we talk about it all the time. And I don't know if you're familiar with psychology terms, but there's a concept called DBT, which is called dialectical behavior therapy. But I have my own definition of DBT, and I call it diagnosis by TikTok, where people get on and they've started talking about things like self-awareness, which is a really huge part of emotional intelligence. But they haven't then taken that theory piece and being able to put it into practice. So it's okay for me to feel my feelings, but now I'm going to feel my feelings all over the place and in a corporate meeting when maybe it's not the right place. And so we actually need, and but TikTok has now given us permission to feel our feels, and everyone has to accept how we're feeling our feels. But I think true leadership is understanding that it's okay for me to feel my feels, but I might need to be considered in my actions that I take as a result of my feelings. And we have not, I call that a bit of a skill gap. There's a huge gap between understanding what we're doing and implementing. And in actual fact, Timothy R. Clark, who does a lot of work on psychological safety, has actually built on Daniel Goleman's framework, where he talks about self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relational management. But he actually added in some extra layers, and he said self-regard. So how do I feel about myself is going to guide what kind of work I'm going to do on myself, which is going to implement how I show up. And he talked about social regard. How do we think about others? Like if you go into a room thinking everyone in the meeting is an idiot, how do you show up in that meeting? Not with the best of intentions, right? But if you go in there with what we call in coaching, unconditional positive regard, that people are doing the very best with the information and the tools that they have in that moment, then the way that your social awareness develops and your social management develops is completely different than if you think everybody's an idiot in the room.
You did put it up very nicely, I would say, because you have brought into a factor that's like psychological, right? So let me ask you, what Because there is this whole conversation about being an introvert or an extrovert that fit particular rules in the society, right?
Sure.
So which type of character or, you know, personality do you think fits a leader better?
So which kind of personality do you think I am? Introverted or extroverted, Ganesh? I'm not sure if it's very obvious from this podcast already. but I think both can be great leaders. And in actual fact, there's research to say that some introverted leaders have the most influence, even though they're not as visible. I think one of the things that you need to understand is yourself first. So one of the sayings that I talk about is in order to lead others, you first must lead yourself. And in order to lead yourself, you must understand yourself. So I have a friend of mine who's this beautifully gorgeous person who is a self-proclaimed introvert, but it actually stops her from leading a lot of the time because she says, oh, well, because I'm an introvert, I do this, or because I'm an introvert, I do that, or because I'm an introvert, I do this. And I'm like, hang on a second. Is that getting you the outcome that you want by using I'm an introvert to justify why you're not taking action? I think you need to be mindful, though, like clearly I'm an extrovert. And when I was a leader in a team full of introverts, I used to scare the absolute bejesus out of them in my staff meetings because I like to think out loud. And that caused me a whole heap of issues because people would think that I was trying to take over the meeting or that I wanted to control the narrative or I wanted my ideas. And I didn't want any of it. It hadn't even occurred to me. I just like to think out loud. I like to be a spitball and soundproof, you know, have a sounding board and do all that kind of stuff. What I learnt was I was not getting the outcome I was seeking because of my approach as an extrovert in a room full of introverts. And so instead of expecting them to adjust to me, I had to adjust to their style because the outcome I wanted needed their input. And the only way to get their input was to adjust how I was communicating in a way that worked for them. So I would send an email the night before saying, hey, in the meeting, I've just had this idea. I'd wonder if I could share it with you. Again, just as a sounding board, not necessarily wanting it to be implemented, but hopefully it would generate some further ideas into this conversation. And the change in the outcomes I was seeking, I was getting much more leverage into the conversation by understanding the difference between the introvert and the extrovert and how each person operates and what they need to feel safe and secure in that conversation to be able to show up as the best version of themselves, if that makes sense.
God, yep, that totally makes sense because I have seen introverted leaders, right, doing that mental switch when, you know, they need to do the talking and the, I would say, heavy lifting for an introvert, right?
Yeah.
Because I myself am an introvert, but when it's needed, you know, the switch goes on. So it's like a social battery, right?
For sure.
Right. That gives you kind of the capacity to deal with the extroverted stuff or the introverted stuff for the extrovert, right? It's the same case. No, either ways.
For sure. So, and it's about where you get your energy from. So I get energy. I love doing podcasts. They're like one of my most favorite things to do. And before I jumped on here today, I was doing some writing and I literally said to the person, oh my gosh, this would be so much easier if I could just get on a call and talk to you about it rather than having to write it down. Whereas an introvert gets their energy by having some of that alone time to process their thoughts and do all of those things, right? So understanding what you need. So I need in my world someone as a sounding board. No, not everyone's the most appropriate sounding board. So be discerning in who you decide to soundboard off that. But also acknowledge that in your team or within your relationship or anything that an introvert is re-energized by having that alone time. And so, and that doesn't mean that you can't be outgoing. It just means that you need to be considered in where you spend your energy at what time and make sure that people are the people that you do that with are ones that you want to spend that energy with. Otherwise, you'll be depleted far greater than if you're with somebody that you enjoy.
Yep. I 100% agree on that because I have gone through that. So it's like, you know, everybody has a limited social battery.
Everyone, including extroverts.
Yep, including extroverts. I don't know how. But, you know, we all seem to have this limited source of energy. So moving on, right? If I see your wall, right? Behind the wall that's behind you, it's like,
yeah.
I don't know if there is any other certifications left. So the reason I was coming to that is, do you think upskilling, right, is important for a person in order to, let's say, go from a decision follower to a decision maker?
So I don't necessarily think you need the certificates, but I think you need a continuous improvement mindset to be able to be a decision maker versus a decision follower, because continuous improvement means that you're constantly reflecting, reviewing, and recalibrating your decisions. And, you know, Adam Grant talks about doing right versus being right, and he talks about the opportunity to think again. And when we're not engaging in a practice of a continuous improvement, we die on the hill on a thought that may no longer serve us anymore. And so I often joke to people, I'm not the same person I was 6 months ago. I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago. I'm not just, I went to New, I've only just gotten back from New York. I'm not the same person I was before I went to New York, because I embraced a really open-minded nature and came from a place of curiosity and continuous improvement. How can I be a better version of myself today than I was yesterday? I like to do the learning that, you know, that comes with certifications, but that's just me. But you could be the person that just likes to consume on YouTube and get really hungry, thirst, and deep dive on a particular topic. I don't think it necessarily is about the certificate. I think it's about the quest, you know, almost going on a quest for continuous improvement. And I think one of the things that stops people is by sitting there going, oh my God, I have to learn something new. Oh my God, when will this ever stop? Oh my God, that's enough. But if you actually embrace the concept of being a better version of yourself each day, then you're like, well, then I'm going to learn something new each day. And then there can be less resentment about the fact that you have to learn something new, and you get to learn something new. And that's kind of exciting.
I read a quote that said, I don't remember it exactly, but it said, the craving for boredom, right, kills more people than any other disease, right? Because you are like, okay, this is my comfort zone. I'm going to be here, right? And people have this attitude of deal with it, right? Like, this is how I am. You know, you got to deal with that.
I am who I am, and you just need to accept that.
Yep, right? So there is no room for improvement for me. Like, this is my best self, right? And you definitely said one thing, that, you know, every person changes, right, through the timeline of their life. And when people change, right, and when, as you said, you know, people are constantly learning and evolving, right, is there a particular indicator of whether they're evolving to good or bad?
Oh, that's a good question. So my first point, going back to you talking about the comfort zone, is I personally think the comfort zone is so poorly named. I think it should be called the familiar zone, because not too many people I know that are sitting in the comfort zone are actually comfortable, happy, and content. They stay there because it's familiar. And so the thought of stepping out into something unknown, as opposed to something, because we associate comfort with comfortable. And I don't know many people that are sitting there, and it's actually that fear of what that next step is. And so we stay in the familiarity versus the stepping out. So first of all, I would like to, for the record, change every piece of text that has ever written comfort zone. I'd like to call it the familiar zone. If we could just get onto that, that'd be great. I think the second part to your question was around, sorry, just remind me, it was around the...
So it was around, what would be the indication if a person...
Oh, for good or bad, right? Yep. Use your powers for good instead of evil. I as a former teacher, I used to say that quite a lot, just saying. use those hacking skills for good instead of evil. Don't hack into the school system and order pizza for everybody. Use it for good. True story, that. And they invoice the school account for all the pizzas they ordered. Yeah, so clearly got some skills, but use them for good instead of evil. Yeah. I think... part of it is that, going back to that reflection and review process, and am I growing in the right direction? And I think that's a little bit subjective, I guess, on everyone's own personal journey, because, for example, I've lost weight recently. And some people will think that I've lost too much weight. Some people think that I've done a good job. Some people think of, you know, and they're like, everyone's got an opinion on it. So whatever you do, so for example, if you do the work on yourself and you become a millionaire, some people are going to say that you've used your skills for evil, because who are you to grow so exponentially when I'm still sitting here not moving, right? So, you know, outside of the whole don't kill anyone, don't harm anyone, don't do that kind of stuff, I actually think we are so scared of possibility that we limit ourselves and we label it as evil, this growth, versus actually acknowledging that we can all use that for our benefit at some stage.
Yep.
And use it to, in the service of others. You know?
Yeah. It's like, so I think what you're trying to say is there is no clear indication apart from your own intuition, right? Like if you think it's good, if you think it's going to be, I'd say, bigger than yourself. Right.
I think that, you know, the medical concept of do no harm. So you can learn some really powerful skills, but it can harm a lot of people. So with this, you know, that whole saying, with great power comes great responsibility, right? So we have to understand that we have an ethical responsibility in how we use that knowledge to do no harm. And whilst you may not be your intention to harm, it might be the impact, right? So that we have to discern between intention and impact, and hold space for the fact that you can inflict harm regardless of whether or not you intend to or not. But the greatest leaders, will go back, circling back to leadership, will acknowledge that the impact was not what was intended and do a repair process and try and repair that, rather to have more alignment between the intention and the impact.
Got it. And you seem to be a very educated person on psychology, right? So let me ask you this. What's your take on modern leaders using psychological tactics? It might be gray hat or even like just in the black area, right? What's your take on it? Like when they use that to wield power and to seem powerful, right?
So in a manipulative form or in general?
So they're just deploying, you know, psychological tactics to, to trick people, right? Into believing something that they don't want to believe, to make people work on something they don't want to work on.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple. Look, I don't think the answer is black and white in any of that area. I think understanding, so my background is understanding behavior. So I would consider myself a behaviorist of forms, because if someone's telling you, like, you know, I worked with young people that would tell you to go away in no uncertain terms, and sometimes they literally meant they wanted you to go away. And sometimes they were actually indicating that they were in a lot of pain and they didn't want you to go away, but they didn't have a better tool to communicate what they needed in that particular moment in time. So I think understanding, and so I am, this is why I want to empower people, not just, you know, leaders is a lot of the work that I do, but building capacity in people to understand themselves means that they won't be manipulated by leaders. They, leaders' job is to create influence. By nature, that is what they're doing. But if you understand yourself well enough, you will minimize your risk of manipulation, because you will understand the tactics. And then again, it comes back to that do no harm philosophy. Leaders sometimes need to help people get out of their own way. There are people that have got their own blocks that they are very, you know, I talk about unconscious existing versus conscious living. And there are some people that continually sabotage themselves. So some psychology strategies are actually helpful to remove those blocks, to help them move into that next phase, to get themselves out of that comfort zone. And they don't have that conscious understanding of that process themselves, to be able to move that forward. So I think, again, do no harm. And I guess as a leader, the job is, am I trying to support and empower this person, or am I trying to trick and manipulate? And you actually have to be really honest with yourself in that conversation. And is your ego, and that will be an ego-based conversation. Is my ego attached to this, or am I wanting what's best for everybody in this arrangement? Mm-hmm. And so if your ego is in the driver's seat, it will tend to, those psychological tactics will tend to lean towards manipulation. If your ego is in the back and your service hat is in the front driving, then it might be about helping and supporting and influencing people to get out of their own way to create the outcomes that are needed.
Mm-hmm. So it's more of intention, right, behind an action than the action itself, right?
For sure. And I think this is where leaders need coaching as well, because they're unconscious. They've got their own, you know, there's like 108 biases in the world, right? So we've all got some form of bias. How yep. conscious we are of those biases.
Mm-hmm.
And that could depend on the day, could depend on your stress load. It could be dependent on how burnt out you are. And one of the things I talk a lot about is understanding our own behavior escalation scales and understanding mm-hmm. how our executive functioning skills in our brain influence how we show up in conversations, how we collaborate, how we work with other people, because we can have those propensities. And, you know, you talked earlier about the introvert versus extrovert. I use a different profiling tool, which talks about it. And in that, we talk about a healthy or unhealthy version of self. Mm-hmm. Now, if I've got a core desire to help people, if I'm helping people from mm-hmm. a service-based model, at the end of the day, I want that person to get the help they need. My ego is not attached to whether or not I'm the person providing that help, but mm-hmm. I want to make sure that they're getting that help. In another side of it, sometimes people help because they need to validate their self-worth by helping that other person. So mm-hmm. where you see this quality and attribute, like you're like, how can helping someone be a negative? Well, when, yep. if I'm using it to validate my self-worth to say, see, I'm a good person because I helped you, Ganesh, with this and I helped you do that, yep. then that's my ego in the driver's seat versus mm-hmm. that more altruistic model of I want to be a service to those that need service and I'm happy to contribute and help. But at the end of the day, I recognize that I may not be the right person for you and that's mm-hmm. okay as long as you get the help that you need. That is yep. service-based leadership. And that's mm-hmm. a huge difference between when your ego is in the driver's seat or when your service is in the driver's seat.
Got it. And moving on, you're also an author, right?
Yes.
So how's that journey been and what do you write about?
Yeah, so I launched my own book last year called Infinite Leadership. And funnily enough, nice. It's about driving continuous improvement and creating mm-hmm. excellence for everybody. Mm. So I'm a little bit passionate about it. And each letter of infinite stands for its own pillar. Mm-hmm. And it's about how, so again, going back to macro and micro. So infinite leadership is a constant idea of a continuous evolution of growth to create mm-hmm. infinite opportunities and infinite possibilities, right? So that's mm-hmm. the overarching concept. And when we consider that learning is an infinite ongoing journey, then we can create more growth and more innovation and more better outcomes along the way. But within that, I've identified 8 key areas that we need to look at. And some people like to do it all at once. They like to do the big infinite model. And some people need to be able to focus on one thing at a time. So the first pillar is identity. Who am I? And as I said, I'm not the same person I was 6 months ago. So this is a constant reflection of who I am right now. Who do I aspire to be? Do my values, actions, behaviors, and thoughts and feelings align with that person? And a really good example of this is I like to consider myself a really kind, compassionate person and a person of an integrity, right? But have you ever in your life received a text message and gone, what? And picked up the phone to respond? And if you read that message, if you fast enough to catch yourself before you send it, check yourself and go, does that actually align with kind, compassionate, integrity? Perhaps not. So I've just given away my power in that moment, right? Yep. So recognizing those hijacks that happen to, mm-hmm. you know, the version of myself that I want to be to the version of myself that I show up as sometimes. And the idea is to get more alignment where your actions and behaviors, your thoughts and feelings are aligned with that version of yourself. And that's a really hard activity for people because we've been taught in society to consider what everybody else wants. And to consider what we want and need has been considered selfish, but it's actually yep. selfless because I'm a better version. Understanding who I am and who I aspire to be allows me to make better decisions. It allows me to put myself in the right rooms with the right people rather than continually pushing it uphill at times because of I'm trying to find where I fit based on somebody else's version of what they consider me to be. The second pillar is nurturing, which we've kind of touched on already, which is that emotional intelligence, but that emotional agility to understand and be able to pivot when we're hijacked by our emotions. Somebody gave me a, you know, somebody sent that message, that text message, and it hurt my feelings. Or, you know, I haven't operated how I wanted to in a meeting or whatever. How do I pivot from that feedback that was given to me? The next pillar is fearlessness. And I identify fearlessness is not the absence of fear, but moving through the feeling of fear and facing it and walking that through that. And in actual fact, the Native American buffalo is the only animal that runs towards a storm when it's occurring. Everything else, everyone else runs away from the storm. And is it because they like water and is it because they like storms? No, not that I've interviewed a buffalo to find out exactly, but it's not because, but what they've recognized is they move through that process faster. They move through the storm. They move through the fear faster by running towards it than running away from it. And so how do we identify that? And we spend a lot of time talking about fear of failure, but we don't talk about fear of success and how that becomes a problem for us because we limit and self-sabotage ourselves. The next pillar is innovation. And, you know, we align innovation with creativity, but it's also understanding how we operate in calm to be our most innovative self. And it also is, you know, there's a concept of a thermometer takes the temperature of the room. The thermostat sets the temperature of the room. So when you're walking into an environment, are you absorbing everybody else's energy? So, you know, if the energy in the room is really negative, are you the thermometer that's going, oh, well, now I'm really flat because I'm in this room with all of this negative energy? Or do you have an innovator's mindset that goes in and says, no, I'm going to set the temperature of this room. It's going to be high. We're going to be engaged. We're going to be doing that because that's where creativity and growth comes from. Then we've got nobility, and I've touched on this also previously, service, ego-free leadership, understanding that our ego is a huge contributing factor to how we show up in leadership versus personally and professionally. And when I'm talking about leadership, I'm talking about how I show up as a parent. I'm talking about how as I show up as a friend. I'm not just talking about the label that I have as a leader. Then we've got influence, which is psychological safety, effective communication. You know, we've got transformation. And I have this funny story. Transformation for me is around the legacy piece as well. So as I'm transforming myself, you know, the All Blacks, which is a New Zealand rugby union team, have a saying that says, your goal is to leave the jersey in a better condition in which you received it. That's your legacy piece. And you're transforming the team to be better along the way. And it was funny, I was talking to someone a while ago and they said, I have no intention of leaving a legacy. And I had to say to them, so are you aware that you kind of leave a legacy whether or not you choose to? It's just whether or not you're conscious about the legacy you're leaving, or is it like, you know, those people that are walking out from the movie and that's everything's exploding in the background as you're coming through and that's the legacy, the legacy of destruction versus the legacy of conscious, active goal of leaving your day, leaving your meeting, leaving your job in a better condition than how you received it. And then the last pillar is that ecosystem. So the understanding that ecosystems are beautiful and fragile. And so we have to be really considered who we let into our ecosystem. And also we have to be in control of what that looks like. So for example, I hate the word balance, but on par for me for the comfort zone, I also hate the word work-life balance because I was terrible at it. I've never, ever mastered the art of work-life balance. I don't know anybody who actually has, but I can get my head around the concept of creating harmony. So in each area of our life, we have our own family, friends, career, finances, leisure, health, you know, personal development, personal growth, what we want for ourselves. We have all these different areas of our lives. And so if you think of, I'm a huge music fan, and you know, in order to make a really good song or to create a beautiful symphony, everything has to play in harmony.
Yep.
And so when something is off, like, for example, you know, your percussion is off, if it's playing too fast, too loud, too slow, too fast, then it misaligns and the symphony doesn't sound harmonious at all. It sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, I often joke about, you're probably too young to remember, but the 80s guitar solos that went forever of the rock bands, right? Mm-hmm. So it's okay for something to play solo in your life. It doesn't mean everything else stops. So if I'm focusing on my career right now, it doesn't mean that everything else ceases to exist. It's still operating around me. It might be playing a little bit softer, but it's still playing. But it also can't play solo forever because it also does not create harmony for my symphony also. And, you know, we need to be the conductor in that process and say, right, now this needs to come back into the symphony. Okay, now this is going to play solo for a little bit. But the idea is to have this beautiful orchestra and this beautiful symphony playing of our lives playing, and that means a balanced and harmonious ecosystem to operate from. And that means making sure that who we let into our ecosystem, who's supporting us, who is giving us energy and who is draining our energy, that we do this audit continually to monitor that so that our ecosystem stays intact.
Got it. Throughout the years, right, of your career, you must have spoken to like literally thousands of leaders, right, around the world. On a macro level, what do you think works? Just mindset or discipline?
I don't think you can have discipline without the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is. And it's a bit like I talk a lot about the fact that people say hope is not a strategy, but without hope, you can't actually have a strategy. There is no strategy. So you have to believe that. In actual fact, a Gallup poll came out this year that said, do you know what the number one thing people wanted from those that they followed, their, you know, from employees wanted from their leaders, is they wanted hope.
Mm-hmm.
55% over trust that came in at 33%. So that's a huge gap, right? That people need hope to be able to then be open-minded to the strategy. Now, if you don't have the right mindset, discipline feels punitive.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got the right mindset, discipline feels like freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you've got to get that mind piece. I think they are inextricably linked, but I don't think you can have discipline without having the right mindset.
Got it. Yeah, thank God I don't have to do the heavy lifting for English this episode. Right. And what's your kind of final key points, right, that you would ask a person to concentrate on, right, if they want to become a fit leader themselves?
So I think foundationally you have to get that identity piece locked in. Understand who you are, accept who you are, not sit there and go, well, this is who I am, so be it. But also understand that this is who I am right now. Is that getting me the outcomes I want, or is it limiting, you know, am I through my own narratives, the own stories that I have taken on board, am I creating self-limits on myself about what my opportunity and possibilities are? So from that pass, I think the identity piece is imperative. I think openness to understanding how you operate in calm and how you operate in chaos, which is part of that identity piece, is also key, because when we don't show up as the best versions of ourselves, how do we circle back and repair? Or do we go, oh, I've blown that up now. Oh, I can never go back because there's so much shame and guilt around what happened. But when we understand that interesting to believe, are human, and as humans, we make mistakes. Yeah. When we are and allow ourselves the grace and self-compassion around that, then we are more open to the opportunity to try and make amends, to try and do the repair. And people are amazingly compassionate. If you went in and said, hey, you know, Ganesh, when we spoke the other day, I didn't show up as the version of myself that I really wanted to in that meeting. When you're ready, would it be okay if we circled back? Because I'd like to try again.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people would sit there and go, oh, sure. You know, they're very, whereas you go, well, you know, I didn't mean it like that. What do you, you know, just get over it, be ridiculous. Then you're not doing that. So I think identity, I think understanding that accountability piece, accountability like discipline is not a dirty word. It's got a negative connotation, but used in the right way are so powerful. And I think the other piece is that the other key piece that I speak a lot about is the fact that psychological safety is a buzzword in corporations. And it comes from a top-down idea that the organization is supposed to provide a psychologically safe workplace for us. But I believe that is true, but also that you as an individual have a duty to yourself and to others around you to understand what it means to feel psychologically safe for yourself, to understand what it feels like for yourself to self-identify what it means to belong, to be a learner, to contribute and to challenge things. What do you need? And also, how are you making sure that everybody else feels like they belong, can be a learner, their contributions are valued, and that when someone challenges you, that you're open to hearing that. So I believe that psychological safety is a top-down initiative but needs bottom-up involvement to get the best out of it, because if we just want the top-down, it is tokenistic versus authentic. And I think that's the problem with a lot of buzzwords and implement, you know, flavor of the month, is they become tokenistic compliance versus authentic embedding.
Got it. So I agree with that a lot, because there are certain things that a human can control, right? Throughout their life, and make a conscious decision to pivot and, you know, actually become a leader, right?
Sure, for sure.
And I think there is no age limit, or there is no ceiling, or, you know, there is no, I would say, a standard, right, to be qualified as a leader.
No, I agree. Yep, 100%. And I think the other part of that is that we have to understand that that's an ongoing journey. And some days, I can tell you there are days where I nailed it as a leader. I was excellent. And I can also tell you there were days where I was not a great leader. But the part of leadership is also that continuous improvement. And Simon Sinek talks about, in The Infinite Game, he talks about sometimes you're going to be ahead of the game and sometimes you're going to be behind the game. And I think, you know, there's a Japanese saying that says fall down 7, stand up, get up 8. And sometimes I believe if you've got a leadership heart, it can feel like falling down 77, getting up 88, or falling down 777. But it's the getting up piece that is what makes you a leader, is the fact that you're prepared to go back and try again and try and do better the next time. The people that give up and just go, oh, no, I'm done, that, you know, that's not what it's about.
Yep. Yep. So to summarize our conversation, right, leadership is more of a conscious decision, right, than a position.
For sure. Conscious actions, behaviors, thoughts, feelings. I believe then.
Because I have seen throughout the years. Yeah, definitely. Because I have seen throughout the years in corporate when the leadership was incapable, right? Other people stood up and said, you know what, I'm going to, you know, take care of this, because I cannot follow unfit leaders.
I think one of the things that I don't know if it's been your experience, but it's certainly been mine, is that I had more examples of a leader I didn't want to be than examples of a leader that I aspired to be. I had many more examples of that. The problem with that is you don't actually have a frame of reference for actions and behaviors of what a good leader looks like. So you're kind of flying a bit blind, but you know you don't want that. You just don't know what this looks like. So that was part of my, you know, you talk about my certificates, but you talk about my knowledge around. That was my driver, is that I wanted to be a good leader. I didn't have examples of what a good leader looked like. So I went on the search. I went and researched. I went and watched YouTube. I went and found what I believe to be good examples of leadership. And then bespoke, picked the attributes that aligned with my value system, and then applied them to create my own personalized model rather than a one size fits all approach to this is what being a leader is. Because I think we still need to recognize our own innate individuality, and the gifts that you have that would make you a great leader would not be maybe attributes that I have within myself or are not my strengths, but I would have other leader. I have other strengths that would make me a good leader or a great leader.
Got it. So essentially it's far more harder to quantify good leaders than bad leaders, right?
I think the pool of examples for good leader is much smaller. It's more like being in a kiddie pool than in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, right? And so we have to wade through that and also understand that while we might categorize somebody as a bad leader, but they might actually have some attributes that would actually, like, so, you know, it's like the law of averages. On average, they're a bad leader.
Exactly.
But they may actually have something that they actually did really well. I had a leader that a lot of people in my organization hated. I actually really liked him. And people thought it was because I got my own way, which, to be clear, I didn't. But if I had to go and talk to him about something, regardless of the decision he made at the end of that conversation, I always felt that he had, my contribution had been valued. He respected my challenge of his ideas and thoughts as a challenge of the process, not of him as a person. So his ego wasn't attacked when I say, well, I'm not really sure that's the greatest idea. What about this and this and this? And I walked away feeling heard. So if you interviewed 1,000 people, I would say 800 of them wouldn't have rated him as a leader. But I had such high regard for him, certain attributes of his leadership style, because he was very person-centric. It was about what was in the best interest of the person, then, you know, what that policy said we had to be compliant on. So that was an attribute of him that I really admired and took forward in my leadership journey. The other stuff I left behind that didn't align. And I think, you know, I think that's a really key piece for your listeners that are learning on this journey is don't conceptualize it in one big bundle. Have a look at the different pieces of the puzzle and take the pieces that you like and create your own puzzle of, you know, what a good leader looks like for you. That attribute from here, that attribute from here, this style from here, this style from here, and create your own version of what that looks like, because you are uniquely you, and use that to your advantage.
Yes. Because we are the best limited version of ourselves, right? We are a collector's piece though.
Broke the mold, my friend. Broke the mold.
Yep. Yes. So, coming towards the end of the episode, first of all, thank you so much for being here.
No, I've had so much fun.
Yep. Thank you so much for being a fun guest. Thank you for doing a lot of heavy lifting.
No problems.
Since you are ahead of my time.
Hey, I'm younger than you. We established this before the podcast episode. Hey.
Definitely.
Yes. But so, on that point though, I think that, you know, age is not a limitation to anything. But I also think that as someone who has done some heavy lifting, because I've been through some really heavy experiences, I'm hoping that by sharing that, you know, that some people can learn from the experiences I've had to mitigate the mistakes that they make along the way to make their journey easier. It's not about saying I'm the best or what I did was the best. It's about hopefully that your audience has taken on board and gone, oh, I actually really like that bit. I'm going to take that bit, or I'm going to and learn from the wisdom of others, so that it makes your journey and everyone else's pathway a little bit easier to get to where you want to go on your journey.
And acquiring knowledge helps you better the probabilities, right?
For sure. If you implement. You know, knowledge, they say knowledge is power, but it's really only potential power, because if you don't use it, then it's not really useful, is it?
When you said knowledge is power, most of the Game of Thrones fans were probably yelling at you.
It's only potential power.
Yes. So thank you so much for being here, taking your time. Hopefully, right, once you write your next book or
Yes.
whenever you're free, we'll probably have you back
Yeah.
once
Oh,
again in the
thanks.
future.
I'd
Yeah.
definitely love to come back. So, I actually just went to New York for another book that I was part of called That Impact Book. I just released another book that I was a co-author in called Business Goddesses. This is my own book. And then by the end of the year, I've got a couple more coming out. So I'd love to keep this journey. And again, they're all designed to be in the service of others to hopefully make their life easier in their own journey, whether it be personally or professionally.
And I especially agree on the point where you said New York changed me.
Yes.
New York does have that effect on people.
Do you know
Right.
what? It was a beautiful, but I went in not knowing what to expect because I had never been there before. But when you're open to the possibilities and the opportunities, the opportunity is it's infinite what can happen if you're open-minded. And I could have gone and done this one thing whilst I was in New York and limited myself and all these other opportunities and wouldn't have. But I went with an open mind and an open heart to saying yes to things and being open to what was out there. And as a result of that, I feel so inspired and energized coming back, that it's only going to help my clients and who I, service and do workshops with. It's going to only help them because I'm a better version of myself now than before I went.
And if people want to reach out to you or just talk to you,
Yeah.
where can they do that?
Yep. So on LinkedIn, Kylie, KYLEE, Leota, LEOTA. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Elements Number Four Success. And or you can send me a message at elementsforsuccess.com.au. You can just go in and go to the contact us page.
Got it. Once again, thank you so much for being here. And to the audience, guys, this is the end of the episode. If you have made it this far, then you probably are taking away some value from this episode. So I would like to thank you for that. And until next episode, thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.